This week on Texas Scorecard Radio in our news, I've got a trio of stories from around the state about local government officials who are abusing power and working against taxpayers. In our interview, we talk with Congressman Ron Wright, a freshman from Tarrant County, about how the Republican minority in the House of Representatives can fight back. And we'll close with a commentary from Brandon Waltons about how walls work. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your lovable host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 Studios in Austin, Texas. If you want to catch us on the web, go to www.texasscorecard.com. Also, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher. I've run out of all the other ones. We're basically on everything now, pretty sure. With this week's top story, I'm going to start out with Jacob Asmussen, our central Texas Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Started with a trio here of stories about bad local government actors. We've got a real bad actor in Georgetown.
You're right, Tony. You see, Georgetown is this little kind of quaint traditional city, but there's been a lot of drama unfolding there lately. Most recently, the mayor, Dale Ross, allegedly threatened a local reporter over her coverage of this whole citywide financial disaster.
Yeah, so let's give listeners, folks don't necessarily pay attention to Georgetown, Texas local politics and the scandals and debacles that go on there. So let's give listeners a little bit of a picture of what's been going on. Basically, the mayor tried to set the city up as a green energy hedge fund.
He did. He switched the city's entire power supply over to renewable energy. Okay, and this move garnered him all kinds of national praise. He even appeared in one of Al Gore's movies.
Yeah, he's palling around with Al. This guy's a Republican, but he's palling around with Al Gore being Mr. Green Energy.
Exactly. So basically, they took a big pile of taxpayer money and went all in on renewable energy, betting that the costs would be lower for residents than if they had, you know, done traditional power sources.
Yeah, well, what I found interesting, they actually bought more than they needed for local residents, basically betting that they'd be able to sell the stuff down the line.
Exactly, and this bet didn't take long to unfold.
Yeah, as everybody would expect, the cost of wind energy and solar and those kind of things, way more expensive than oil or coal or natural gas or those kinds of things. And so this has been a bust, huge bust.
And now residents are having to pay higher electricity bills while all the other energy is cheaper. It's a disaster.
Yeah, so a disaster for taxpayers in Georgetown. The local newspaper there covering this story, and the mayor doesn't like it.
Yeah, apparently they had a run-in, this reporter and the mayor, at a museum one evening, and the mayor came up to the reporter and said, "Hey, you know, your reporting's bad. You know, I have influence on the city's spending that could hurt the newspaper and may not be around much longer." And the reporter was like, "Well, does this mean I should get another job?" And the mayor said, according to the reporter, the mayor said, "Yeah, that'd be a good idea."
So basically, the mayor doesn't like the reporting from the newspaper, and he says, "Hey, we're going to withdraw all of our advertising or whatever it is that the city spends that benefits this local paper. We're going to pull that out because we want to stop them from saying the truth about what's going on with this energy debacle."
Yep, and just a few days after the reporter published this story, the mayor did a quick interview with one of the local news stations and said, "Oh, well, the article's untrue and all this and that," but he did say he called the reporter and apologized for any appearance of a threat or bullying. So interpret that how you will.
Well, I think voters in Georgetown will have to interpret that all they want to there. Appreciate your reporting on it, Jacob.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn and talk to Charles Blaine down in the Houston Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Another story down there, another mayor, Mayor Sylvester Turner, waging war on his voters.
Hey, Tony. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a rough week for mayors in Texas, or I guess for taxpayers in Texas, really. So here in Houston, we've got Mayor Sylvester Turner, who is just in this long-running war against, it started out to be against firefighters, now it's against taxpayers. He filed a motion on Friday in a lawsuit that has been pending for a while. saying that the Proposition B referendum that voters passed in November should be deemed unconstitutional because it takes the power away from negotiating from the mayor and gives it to the city. So we're taxpayers in a fight down here.
Yeah, basically, you've got a proposition there that required a pay parity between local police and fire. The local voters adopt this thing back in November, and you've got the mayor saying, oh, no, the Constitution doesn't let the voters have control. It has, you know, under the Constitution, the government officials have to be in control.
Exactly. Yeah. He's saying that all the power needs to be with him. This is not the way it should work. And it's funny because he has had this campaign running during the actual campaign for Prop B. He was using town halls to kind of go out there and bash it. And then ever since it's been passed, he's still out there bashing it. Although he's telling council one thing, he's promising them he's implementing it. And then he's going out and filing lawsuits like this and talking off the record about how bad it is.
Yeah, that's been an interesting element is basically they've been hiding this level of opposition. So the thing is passed and he's telling everyone on council, well, of course, I'm working to implement Prop B. They weren't. They were gearing up to file this lawsuit.
Right. And it's interesting because Wednesday or Thursday of last week, 2 days before they filed the suit, they had the deputy finance director testifying before council. They were asking, you know, when's it going to go into effect? He's like, well, we're in the process of creating the, you know, employment codes with HR so that we can do the pay scales and everything. And so it was, you know, they made it really seem like it was just days away, maybe weeks away. And then all of a sudden, Friday night around 4:35 o'clock, this drops.
Now they bring the hammer down. This isn't the first litigation that's gone on in this. The folks who put the proposition on the ballot, they had to fight to get it on the ballot.
Right. He refused to count it when they submitted it, and they had to, they waited a couple months, and when they saw that it wasn't moving, the Firefighters Union sued the city to get it counted, and the city said that they didn't have the manpower to count it in, as fast as they wanted. But once the judge ruled that it needed to be counted a week later, they had no problem getting that done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think it's an interesting thing when government officials wage war on voters. You know who wins is the voters. So right. I look forward to seeing how this plays out down there. Thanks for your reporting on it, Charles.
Thanks for having me.
Finally, let's turn to Destin Sinski, our Capitol correspondent. You've got several stories of local government officials basically holding local taxpayers hostage, trying to oppose reform efforts in the legislature.
That's right, Tony. So some elected officials in the past couple of weeks have been very adamant about their opposition to these reform bills. Got a couple of different examples that have made their way to our desk, and we're happy to talk about them today.
Yeah, so tell us about the one from North Texas.
Yeah, so Representative Justin Holland's office got a letter from a mayor in their district basically saying, hey, if you pass this measure that would rein in our ability to pass fines and fees on new developments in our district, then taxpayers are going to suffer. That's his actual wording is.
Yeah, and this is a common sense reform bill that's in the legislature. Basically, these local governments are coming in and charging fees for services that they deliver, like inspections and those kinds of things, based on the value of the property. It's kind of like how wealthy you are, you pay more.
Right. Yeah. So there's different ways that this has been implemented, but how it ought to be implemented, Tony, is based on the cost of performing the services, right? The cost of performing the inspection or of getting the license.
Yeah, not, you know, if you have a high value property where we're just going to charge you more because, you know, I guess we think you can pay it.
Right. And so this is a fast growing city. They've got a lot of new development and they're taking advantage of this process. And it may be unconstitutional based on the Texas Constitution. So more to see on that. But
yeah.
Holland to pull the bill, essentially.
Yeah, so they're saying, look, hey, we're going to make taxpayers suffer if you pass this reform. So they're fighting back that way. You've seen this down in Bernie and the city of Austin, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so this, you know, obviously property tax reform, big topic this session, the topic this session. A lot of the local officials are doing the same thing, ramping up their rhetoric about what they're going to do should SB2, this property tax reform bill, get passed.
And yeah, they're saying, look, hey, if you give voters a right to vote on property tax increases, we're going to slash basic services.
Yep.
and take it out on the taxpayers.
Yeah, and even as going as far as taking it out on, you know, the employees of the city and localities, you know, saying the city of Austin has all of their new contracts, any of their new hires in the police department, saying if this bill gets passed, you agree to take a pay cut, which is just absolutely ridiculous.
So they're actually putting this in their contract. They're saying, look, hey, if this legislation, which, you know, is on the move but hasn't even passed yet, if it passes and voters have more say about property tax increases, we're going to automatically cut the pay of police officers in the city.
That's right. So putting these arbitrary caps in place on, you know, streets and schools in the school districts, police and fire at the local level, saying, hey, we're going to slash these services if we can't, you know, decide how much money we want to take out of your pocket.
Yeah. Look, the reforms, this means we shouldn't back down on reform. We need more reform.
Absolutely.
we need more to rein in these local governments. Well, thanks for keeping an eye on it and appreciate your reporting.
Yep. Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
This past Sunday, I filled in as a guest host on Sunday Scorecard, a program that airs on the Facebook page for Empower Texans on Sunday evenings. If you aren't catching it, you should go check it out. Great information about what's coming each week in the legislature and around the state. Host Carrie Cheshire and I interviewed Congressman Ron Wright about what's going on in Washington, and I thought you all would enjoy that.
Congressman Wright, you're somebody who I think taxpayers are very familiar with. You've had a great record as a local elected official, and now you're up in Congress in the swamp, seeing the action for the first time, kind of up close and personal. I know that you had spent time there as a staffer before, but what is it like actually taking these votes, and what is it like now that Democrats are in control of Congress?
Well, to the first question, it is different because when you put your card in the slot and actually vote, then all the responsibility for that vote falls to you. But I'll tell you, it's being in the minority, it's not fun. Our job, of course, first priority of the minority is to become the majority again.
That's right.
And we'll do everything we can to accomplish that. And we're getting a lot of help from the Democrats. You know, I told my fellow Republicans when I got up there, I said, you know, the worst thing that could happen to Republicans would be if the Democrats decided to be reasonable. Fortunately for us, they have not learned from their own history. And their history is every time they're in power, they overreach.
Yeah, that's right. You're seeing the Green New Deal file, which is completely insane.
That's probably the most pronounced example of that. And it's amazing how others, including presidential candidates, who are going to be running in the Democratic primary, are falling right into line behind that. It's like they're afraid to argue with the radicals in their own party.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, Congressman Ryan, I want to ask you real quick about, you know, I think a lot of taxpayers across the state, across the country, a lot of Republicans were very disappointed in Congress over the deal that was struck to keep the government open. Of course, you know, not really providing that much right. In terms of actual wall funding. President Trump declaring an emergency after that. I noticed that you and most other Texas Republicans voted against that legislation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'd love to. I was thrilled with you know, the number of Texas Republicans that voted against it. It was basically a 2-to-1 margin. And for good reason. It does not do what we need in order to accomplish the number one priority, and that's protect the American people. And there are aspects of that bill that, while I understand why the president signed it in order to prevent another partial shutdown. It was a stinker. And look, I have no criticism of the people on the conference committee who forged this compromise, their job was to create a bill that both houses could pass and the president would sign, which I thought was like an almost impossible task. They were able to do that, but it wasn't a bill that I could support or that most of the Texans in the House could support. And none of the freshmen, I want to quickly add, voted for it.
Yeah, I mean, it really is amazing that this is as controversial as it is. Going back to what you're saying about the Democratic Party and their positions, these were positions that even just 10, 15, 20 years ago, Democrats would have been saying, well, of course we've got to stop illegal immigration. Of course we need to have a secure border. These were not controversial things, and yet here we are.
We've had Chuck Schumer in the past, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama. All of them were pretty much in line in wanting to stop the huge influx of illegal immigrants coming across. What changed is Donald Trump became president and started keeping the promises he kept in the campaign.
And they, of course, are setting themselves apart and against the president.
Listen, it is visceral hatred of Donald Trump. And they would, honestly, they would rather vote to, you know, basically do things that would harm Americans than allow Donald Trump to have a victory, to have a win. And that's a horrible thing to say, but that's how it appears. Because, like I said, they've changed their position, and they've done it at a terrible time because we know how it is a crisis. It's a crisis on the other side of the border for those coming up. We know that 1 in 3 women are going to be sexually assaulted. We know that human trafficking, and this is a big deal, and this, you know, the Democrats are behaving as though it doesn't exist at all. But the amount of human trafficking, and we don't even have a precise number on that, is huge. And it's young women coming up from Central America with the promise that they'll get into the United States and get a job. What they're not told is that job is prostitution. And they're trapped there. It is essentially a form of human slavery, and that's a big statement to make, but that's precisely what it is.
Well, the numbers I've heard on it are completely shocking. I was at the Young Conservatives of Texas convention, and Attorney General Ken Paxton was talking about human trafficking issues and said somewhere in the neighborhood of 300,000 victims a year. I mean, 300,000.
That's 300,000 we know of.
Yeah.
Right.
When you look at the huge number of people that cross over illegally, we really don't know what it is. And that's just one thing. You know, we know about the drugs. We know about the gangs. And we know that as a sovereign nation, we have every right in the world to protect our borders and expect people from other countries to respect our laws, just as we would be expected to respect their laws if we went to their country. You know, they try and sometimes make this out to be something racial. It's not. We're all for legal immigration. But here's something people don't realize, and I brought this up last night at the Lincoln Day dinner. This is a national security issue. We have people, if you talk to Border Control, they'll tell you, we have people coming across the Texas border from Mexico from all over the world. It's not just Mexico and Central America. That's the big numbers. That's what's capturing all the attention. But they're coming from Asia, from Africa, Europe, the Middle East. In May last year, we had over 135 men from Bangladesh that were caught coming across the border south of Laredo. I mean, who would have ever thought, you know, that they'd come from Bangladesh? And, you know, if people want to come from Bangladesh, we'll welcome them if they come legally.
Right. Well, of course, we're speaking right now with Congressman Ron Wright from Tarrant County. Ron, I got to tell you, you got a number of fans right now in our comments right now. Karen Starnes says, stay swamp free. And Jonathan Silva says that he still backs the bow tie. Congressman Wright, I think it was very encouraging for us back here in Texas to see all of the freshman Republican lawmakers voting against this legislation. You did still have some people with a lot of seniority here in the Texas delegation voting for it. Can you talk a little bit about what the freshman Texas Republicans are they working together? Do you feel like you've got a good team of folks? It feels like on the ground that we sent a lot of good folks up to D.C.
Right. I absolutely agree. And let me first say that the Texas delegation total, Republican delegation, is the best in the United States Congress. I'd put us up against anybody, even though we weren't all on the same page on this vote. When it comes to Texas, we usually sing off the same page. The freshmen are fabulous. I mean, we've got some heavy hitters in Van Taylor, Jim Roy, Dan Crenshaw, all these guys. Lance, if you go back 6 months prior to the election, then you've got Michael Cloud as well. Mm-hmm. They're a great group of guys, and they're doing great work. It was frustrating in the beginning because we were sworn in and had a partial shutdown. Nothing got done in the House. It was a political circus. We didn't get our committee assignments until towards the end of January. So we couldn't really, do the work of Congress, which is starts at the committee level. But we are now. All of us are working hard. All of us at the committee level, we're all standing up for what's right, even though we're in the minority. One of the things that we have to do, because the minority, all they have is process. And we have to use the process, use the rules, to make sure that, number one, the majority does it right, does it the right way, and to keep the bad stuff from happening, because their agenda is as radical as anything that's ever been in the United States Congress. And that should concern all Americans, conservatives, independents, even some liberals are kind of shocked by what they hear sometimes from their own people.
What are y'all able to do as a minority party in Congress to fight back? How what is it that you're actually capable of doing? Is it just putting a spotlight and defining the conflict over this legislation, or are there actual tangible ways to block bills and prevent things?
We use the rules, and we try to keep them honest, and that includes at the committee level, because that's where it starts, and that's where their talking points are carefully honed, and that's where, they'll have three witnesses at the table, we'll have one, that kind of thing. But we have to refute all of their arguments and expose how senseless those arguments are. And then try, when they file a bill, if there's a markup, try and shoot as many holes in it as we can, except where we agree. And there will be some bipartisan legislation, or at least there should be. I'm thrilled with the committees I got on Foreign Affairs and Education and Labor. To give you an idea, though, of what we're up against, the first two hearings we had on Education and Labor were not about education, really. The first was about the threat of not covering pre-existing conditions on the workforce. So it was a health care hearing, and there is a health component to the Education and Labor Committee, although most of it goes to the Energy and Commerce Committee. But that was their very first hearing, and the second hearing was about going to $15 an hour, minimum wage, which is a double. It's not just an increase. It's mm-hmm. doubling the minimum wage.
It's a banning people from getting $12 an hour jobs. That's that's what
exactly.
That
exactly. And we know intuitively, but we also know just from experience that when you have a huge hit like that on small business, which employs most of the people in this country, they're going to start eliminating positions because it's the only way they can survive. And, I made the point that doubling the minimum wage is great if you get to keep your job.
Right.
But it's not so great for those that lose their jobs.
That's right.
And we know that will happen. And it will be a terrible for the economy. And we've got the best economy we've had in a generation. So we've got to keep that going. We've got to continue with doing away with senseless regulation. And the president's done a great job with that. But the first and most important priority always is to protect freedom and the American people. And I will do everything in my power to do that.
Well, fantastic. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And please keep up fighting the fight in the swamp. We appreciate it.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
President Trump was in Texas recently, and our own Brandon Waltons traveled out to El Paso to see him speak. Brandon shares some thoughts in this week's commentary on how walls work.
Crime rates have dropped since a border wall was built in El Paso. Why then is the mainstream media ignoring it? I'm Brandon Waltons with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. El Paso served as the backdrop recently as President Donald Trump held a rally in which he called on Democrats to support the construction of a wall along the southern border to curb illegal immigration. The wall has been a cornerstone of Trump's campaign since its inception. Since then, Democrats and liberal Republicans have predictably attempted to stonewall progress in Washington, D.C. Democrats claim a wall would be immoral. But in truth, it is immoral to continue to ignore the human trafficking, child smuggling, and drug running that happens every day along our porous border. It's a reality that's all too familiar to those that live along the more than 80% of the southern border that has no man-made obstacles, walls, fences, metal slats, or otherwise. In El Paso, where President Trump spoke, crime was rampant during the 1970s and 1980s. Then, in 1993, a fence was built to separate the city from Ciudad Juarez, its crime-ridden neighbor across the Rio Grande. The results were immediate. Talking to locals in El Paso, as the crime rate fell, the city instantly felt safer. In fact, in just the first year alone, apprehensions by U.S. Border Control dropped 73%. One gentleman at the rally I met with, who had lived in El Paso his entire life, told me that 30 years ago he would never dream of raising a family so close to the border. Now, he had raised 7 children. President Trump said it best during his rally. "Just a few thousand feet from where we're standing," he said, "is one of the most dangerous cities in the world, Juarez. Thanks to a very powerful border wall in El Paso, it is now one of the safest cities." It should come as no surprise, walls are effective. And yet, the Democrats and their allies in the liberal media continue to twist facts to avoid this simple truth. Newspapers tried to tear President Trump apart when he mentioned the effectiveness of El Paso's border wall during his State of the Union address, comparing incorrect years and using bad data to try to undermine his argument. But as the political battling over the wall wages on in Washington, D.C., and as President Trump declares a state of emergency on the southern border, Texas could take the matter into its own hands. 2 members of the Texas House of Representatives, State Representatives Kyle Biederman and Briscoe Kane, are drafting legislation to have Texas help pay for its portion of the proposed barrier. While the legislation has yet to be filed, it's not the first time the idea has been thrown around. Earlier this year, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick told the president that if the federal government will reimburse the state for the money, Texas would build the wall itself in the areas where it's needed along our 1,254-mile border. However the wall or barrier or slats are ultimately built, Texans know how important securing the border is. As the president often says, without borders, we don't have a country. And as those that call El Paso home know firsthand, walls work. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Brandon Waltons.
Well, that's all I've got for you this week. At the top of the program, I was mentioning you can subscribe to this show. If you're catching it on the radio or catching it as a one-off on the website, we're also available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. So I've got the list here. iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and now Spotify. So we're on all five of those platforms, your favorite podcasting platforms. Go check them out. Go subscribe. Never miss a show. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.